even if we're 3D animals, we really think everything 2D.
Yeah.
And a lot of our creation we do are 2D. Like, take paintings. Paintings are 2D representation of the world. Movies are 2D representation of videos of the world. We really think in creatively in 2D. So for all of us who start thinking 3D, I think we need something like that Apple AirKit to inspire people to start moving things in 3D and mixing it in our real world and start experimenting and seeing how it feels. So I think that's going to grow that community significantly.
You are listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Today, I am honored and delighted to have Philippe Lewicki on the show. So Philippe, welcome to Hooked on Startups.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to the next few minutes.
Yeah, a few minutes, hopefully longer than that. Yes, it depends on how good the questions are, I guess. Yeah, you've got 3 minutes of this interview, make it quick. So Philippe, you are the founder and CEO of this fabulously named company, which is After Now. Mm-hmm. And so you're an augmented reality company, and you're one of the pioneers of developing content for experiences in mixed and augmented reality. So these are phrases that don't trip off the lips of most people. So the first thing I really want to get across is, tell me, what is the difference between augmented reality and virtual reality? Because I think most people understand this concept of virtual reality, which is where you grab a trash can and you sort of attach it to your head. So what would you say is the real differences between VR and what you're doing in the AR world?
So technically, there's no real difference. It's all part of a same spectrum. In the long term, there won't be any difference between the two. And what you will do is what we call mixed reality. We'll mix the real and the virtual. What you can see today with the devices for virtual reality, they're closed headsets. So you don't see anything outside the real world. You're fully immersed and you're like kind of blind from the real world, and you're put into a virtual world. So that's what people call virtual reality. And what people talk more about the augmented reality part of things, it's a place where you're seeing through 2D glasses the real world, and some little elements are added to that real world in different type of levels. But all that fits one spectrum. We call it mixed reality. It's all the same thing. It's like we're humans, and we add to our humanity some virtual reality, some virtuality. So you have virtual objects that start coming to life. So you can be fully immersed and you're fully into an immersive world, or only a little bit of it. Like, you know, you can have a little work there and a little dog walking around, and that's just your virtual pet that's with you, and you're still part of your real world, but there's like little element of it. If you think that something is not beautiful enough, you can just make it nicer for yourself, and that's your part of your, you know, augmented of the world. Technically, practically, in what you see today, applications like Pokemon Go, they call it virtual augmented reality, where it is correct. It's, you know, you put little Pokemons into a real world and you call it augmented reality. So it's adding those little things there. This is getting better. Right now, if you look at Pokemon Go, it's fairly basic, but those are getting more anchored. They more feel like presence in the real world as those technology evolve. But eventually, it will be always the same thing, all the same thing. You have virtual reality to, you know, a little bit of it, a lot of it, to fully immersed. And we call that the spectrum of mixed reality.
And so let's fast forward to something like, you know, 10, 15 years from today. Let's say we're at 2030.
Ooh.
That's... But it's not too long. I mean, it's what, 13 years away from today. So, and if you go back 10 years and imagine the technological changes over the last 10 years. So the incredible thing about what you're doing is that you are helping to build a completely different way that people interact, not only with technology, but with each other. And do people really understand the seismic changes that will be occurring over the next decade?
If technology permits that evolutions in the next few years, yes, the change will be to a level that, to the same level that the computer, you know, came in, like the personal computer, the PC with the mouse and the screen, like when the Mac and those Windows, it will be that, you know, it will be that same level of seismic change that we'll face there, where we'll have to rethink, where we're rethinking everything. We're rethinking exactly everything from the beginning, how we interact with the machines and each other. The main thread to try to imagine how it would look like. So there's little piece and nuggets you can get to imagine that and help people through that understanding that transition. The first one is just imagine a world without any screen. Today, we're interfacing with each other remotely or with the internet over little flat screens. Imagine a world where none of those screens exist, okay? And they really don't, they're not there anymore. And that's not the way you communicate and you interact with machines. So imagine that and how it would look like and from there, how would you do things? How would you do email without a screen? And how to rethink this? So that's a thread of thought that helps people trying to see that change.
And so you mean, when you say without a screen, you mean without my mobile phone, without my smartphone, without my Mac, without my TV screen?
Yes, without your Mac, without your TV screen, without your dashboard in your car, without the little, you know, little screens that you have on the on your oven or your microwave, all those things are going to be useless. But all those screens and their meaning of it will be merged with the real world, and they will be attached to our real world. So they will, at that point, everything will have those virtual representations that will appear in our real world. They were real, very close to what we are looking at the real world.
And we're not talking about Tom Cruise in, you know, one of his movies or the Tony Stark lab. So what was that movie with Tom Cruise? You know, when he was moving.
Minority Report,
exactly. So I think everyone thinks that, that is what augmented reality is where you have this effectively a screen, but it's on a wall. But what you're saying is it's much more immersive. It's like being within, it's like taking a dive inside your computer.
I like that part, dive into the computer. It's not Tron. It doesn't look like Tron either. It's more like the computer getting outside in our world. Wow. The computer is invading our world. And you can think about it, it's already happening. When you think about all the Internet of Things, everything is Internet connected. From your fridge to lights to your thermostat, all those, they're actually talking to each other and they can talk to you if you have the proper device. Now they display those little screens for it. The Echo is getting a little screen now. Those things will not be needed in the future, but they will be everywhere with us. Like the internet is coming out of those machines and getting into our world physically as the Internet of Things. And the interface for that will be matching that integration. So that's more the computers are coming out of their little box into our world and us getting inside it.
And I think one of the great examples you give of this is just buying food from a restaurant and how that.
Yeah, that was our first demo. And that was a great example we wanted to give for people to get an idea, like a concrete example of how your experience will be. Because we started our research before those devices existed, before the HoloLens was actually publicly buy it. So we were working on it and we were exactly on that premise. Okay, how will our world look like without screens? How do you go in a restaurant and order food when you don't have a menu? You know, how would that work out? And our idea was to actually show you the food. The food would appear. And how would you be
wearing, but you'd be wearing some sort of device. So like a pair of glasses or a contact lens, or there needs to be some sort of interface, I guess. Is that how you see? I'm just trying to imagine the people around the table at the restaurant, are they wearing super lightweight glasses or something, some device like that?
So today there are glasses, yeah. Today the technology that's going to be in the next 5 years, it's going to be glasses. Likely it may not stay glasses. There's other technology that are coming and they're going to appear that it would be something different. So we don't know exactly what it would be, but the first generation of it are glasses. And the first you can buy today, they're actually those wearable, wearable. Compared to the future we want, they're wearable glasses because nobody wants to get in the street with this. the expectation that there will be, as you're reading glasses you have today, that will be coming in hopefully fairly fast here. And that permits, yes, at that point, you can go in restaurants wearing those light, your regular glasses. It's like today we carry our phone everywhere.
Yeah.
Instead of carrying our phone, we'll carry a little pair of glass, a pair of glasses. And when we need to get into mixing our world, we'll put them on and they will be fashionable and they will look great.
So in other words, you're not going to stand out. You're not going to be wearing, 40 pounds of headset gear to go to this restaurant. So, just imagining you're sitting at this table with a couple of your friends and you're wearing these incredibly inobtrusive devices, whether it's something on your shirt or it could be something, like glasses. So how do you try and unlearn everything that has been learned over the last 20,000 years about ordering food, and how do you create this sort of concept of something so new that that it's impossible even to begin to understand how to do that?
Yeah, and that's actually the way you present it is awesome, because we think, oh, that's easy. We know how to do UI, we know how to do interfaces, we just put those headset and we put everything in there. Actually, that doesn't work. It doesn't make sense to put back 2D flat interfaces in a 3D space. Actually, you're just better with your computer than doing that through those glasses. So what you have, the path to go there, and it's to think about how you would do it the most naturally. So for example, in the restaurant experience, if you need to customize your meal, how do you customize the meal? How do you get what you want in there out of all the ingredients? So I'm a vegan, so I'm going to remove the meat. So I grab the meat and I put it away and I put the tofu in. I just physically grab the things and put them in. So as a human, I do my gestures as do them as normal humans. So that's how it will feel and like, is that you will behave with virtual thing as we're behaving today with physical things.
And it's not just going to be a list in front of you. You can imagine yourself being surrounded or sort of immersed with these food options. And so you're literally, you're being the chef yourself almost. So you're saying, well, I have some of that with some of that. And this is, so I can just imagine the experiences where you can create. I mean, does that lead on to the ability for humans to be unshackled from technology? Is this something that's going to just allow us to really grow?
So that's really what we're looking for. That's exactly what our hope is that behind it, is that today we're crippled on our little desktop computers or our little laptop, and physically we're standing still, not moving, most of our day, typing on those little keys all day and looking at the screen. We're like, for me personally, when I imagine what we're doing and imagine the entire workforce working behind computers, it's not very different than the Matrix and those people connected to the machines. We're basically just not moving like this for the entire day. And what my hope is that if we, with those technology that are wearable, you talk to them, you physically interact with things, we're going to start standing up and working standing up and working with movements and interacting with each other's, but much more movements and walking and ending up, the fun thing, for example, when you think about that Minority Report, let's get back to that. That's very inspiring. That was like, for a lot of people, that was, oh, there's a way of thinking about interacting with the machine differently than we've been doing for the past 20 years, So let's put the hands in here, yeah. Like doing like those nice gestures, and doing those movement in there. And you can do that for the past probably 5 years. What Minority Report can actually be implemented for a long time now. It actually works. The technology is already there. The practicality is not there. There's not actually really good benefits in having that type of UI today. There's no real practical use for these interactions. One of the things that's interesting in there is that I've been going forth and back with a few people is that we've us and the teams, some of us start working much more in VR and in AR, okay? And we spend long time in those headsets, okay? And we have our hands up, like in mandatory reports. And the idea before when mandatory reports is that you cannot stay up there like this. Your hands will be too tired. You know, physically it's not possible. But over the past year working in that environment, we realized that our body gets used to it. The muscles come back. We're starting being more muscular. And yeah, actually, I can be, you know, sketching my models in VR for 2 hours in a row and not really at all feel tired. Which that was not possible a year ago. I would be exhausted, you know, by standing up and doing this. So we have to relearn how to be human and actually be active. You know, we lost that activity that we used to have when we were hunting or even working in the fields, you know. So that activity and that physical activity will come back. And I think that will make your, I mean, being in movements, I don't know, I don't have the proof of it, but it seems like it makes us be happier.
Well, I think you're right, because I think if you look back, I mean, this particular segment that we're in, like the computer age, is 30 years old, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's not hundreds of years. It's literally just the last three decades where we've had, you know, our lifestyles have changed. We've become much more desk bound to a certain extent, or much more sedentary, because previously, if we wanted to, you know, speak to people, you know, you'd go and have a meeting, you go and see people. But with the advent of, you know, video conferencing, people, you just tend to sit at your desk. So I think you're absolutely right that what this is doing is that this is unchaining you from your desk, mm-hmm. untethering you from your office environment, but at the same time, providing you much more ability to do your job. And so we have this restaurant example where you're sitting at this restaurant where you can presumably you could take a walk to the to the field where you pick the grapes, or you could choose that tomato there, and you can actually go outside of the restaurant to the to an area to actually choose your food, and then come, and then you're right back where you started.
Well, yeah, and let me reframe your example here. Is that there's ways of doing it today where you would see, an ingredient here on the table. Okay, those tomatoes look great. You know, I may want to look at it, but let's see how there have been how people were collecting them, or what was the use of it. Well, you'd see there at that point, you'll see a silly little 3D scene. It won't be like a flat movie. It will be a 3D scene of the place, where you can see people working and doing like on your table, but a miniature vision of it. Like one of those drone, but you were just like physically seeing what's happening there and how they were working, and then say, okay, yeah, well, that makes sense. I like the environment, looks good, and I like, you know, it sells you on the food.
Yeah, so you're not, so what we're saying is you're not staring at your sort of 4-inch screen at some video playing. You're actually there. You're there, you know, in Sri Lanka picking the tea. You're there in Northern California, you know, harvesting the corn or whatever. But and then if you translate that to a commercial environment where someone's working out in the field, and you know the ability for them to do their job much better because of the access to information. I'm thinking about surgery, and medicine. And did you have issues with your head feeling like it's about to explode every day with these ideas?
Oh, so if we go into the restaurant experience as a consumer experience, and that technology for consumers is going to take a while. But if you think about professionals today, They're already using those devices, like, you know, those HoloLens. They're already using them. They have limitations, but they still have add so much value to what they're doing that there's a lot of implementations happening. And in terms of medical, there's a number of groups doing pre-surgery work, doing DICOM visualizations to view CT scans in 3D over imposed the patient's body, so you can actually see where tumors are exactly where positions on the in space in volumes, and what are the tissues around it. So there's a lot of support with those devices in terms of visualizing already the data that we have with all that technology and make better decisions. Architects are using, widely using it now. It's not just a niche or a few experiments. There's a number of products for architects today that enable them to visualize their building in their small or in construction sites. On constructions, the constructions world is the most, construction design or architecture are the biggest use of those augmented reality today, and they're getting a lot of benefits out of it. We know Volvo is using it in a number of places, and other car manufacturers are using it on the manufacturing lines, on designing the manufacturing planes. So for work today, they're being used, and in the next 2 years, it's going to be, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, if not predicted millions, are going to start using and wearing those devices at work for various reasons.
So, and if you combine that with artificial intelligence, I think, you know, someone mentioned the other day that their view was that AI would be the same change to society as electricity brought. So mm-hmm. we're at this sort of tipping point where we have all of these exponential technologies. We have AR, we have AI, we have driverless transport. Do you think we're entering an era of massive social change as well as technology change?
Yeah, so we're seeing it like this. You have three things. So you have the AI, you have the AR, VR, which are, you know, our interface to it, visual interface to it. AI are really important. Artificial intelligence is everywhere in those devices. It's for the voice recognitions, it's for the image recognitions, for the understanding of the world and the spatial world. All those things are going to go forward, you know, before we even we get to a personal assistant. So the AI, the AR and virtual, and what we put in there is the Internet of Things. We really believe that this concept of having everything internet connected in our real world will be one of those three components that will lead to, we call it the next big thing, and we don't know what it is, but there's something, because all those three worlds are really evolving really fast. There's a lot of investments into those three spaces, and those will, they're really showing that something is going to happen. It's like some big conversions, some big fundamental change is going to happen in terms of our technology. So yeah, AI is like a big part already of those devices and that technology for AR and VR. And it has its own standalone, you know, interactions and understanding of the world. But all those three are really all intricated, you know, into creating that new future and that new evolution. So it's the size of change is all dependent on that to be those promises to be fulfilled. At any point in time in this, in what we're talking about, any point in time, there could be like a big technology block or a big popular aversion to something that will make all that disappear and give us like 10 or 20 years setback.
Yeah, but history tells us that there may be setbacks, but the forward motion and the pace of development is unlikely to stop. But one of your other interviews, you talk about a buttonless society, and you have this sort of great, sort of almost like a normal distribution curve where you have people that remember an age where there were no buttons, where there was no electricity, there was nothing to switch on or off. And you talked about being in a sitting room in a home where you don't switch a light on, you don't turn a dial, by moving around the lighting changes.
Yeah, exactly. So that's based on the conversation. I forgot, I'll come back, but told me his grandmother was explaining that when she grew up, there was no, you know, when she was young, there was no buttons because she was pre-electricity. And I found it like that fascinating because we were at the same time working on this U-Lights, you know, Internet of Things connected lights app for the HoloLens. And the way we interact with the lights is, like you said, we move in different places and the lights change based on where you are. Or you just look at a light and, you know, do this little air tap on it and you can change it. And that's when you do the air tap like that, that's the first thing that's better than a switch on the wall. You know, you can talk about Internet of Things, but if you have to open an app on the phone, find the app, open the app, click on the button in the app, you better just go to, you know, the 2-inch and press on the button on the wall. It's faster. So, but with this, it's not easier because you have the big headsets. But if you imagine a future when that's your normal, regular day-to-day glasses, then at that point, it's better than a switch on the wall. So then why would you have switch on the walls again? So from pre-electricity to a world where technology is so integrated with ourselves, with us, and so not physically present in our world beyond the virtual world, you know, become beyond that virtual vision of it, at that point, we can go back into a world that's much more natural, much more pre-electricity time in that sense, where we don't have to interact with it. So that was this analogy where there was a time to go back where we're more physical, we're more moving, and where we're more naturally interacting with each other and things. And we will get back to that time now when we're going to be freed up and not being stuck to our Facebook feed anymore.
And let's talk about what you do at After Now. So we have this landscape of change. We have these monumental forces coming from technology, from artificial intelligence. You know, the funding is there to make that happen. So at After Now, tell me more about what you create, how you're trying to create the user interface or the way that humans now will need to interact with this type of new technology. How do you do it?
A lot of testing, a lot of trials and errors. I would say that's how we're doing it in general, as a general manner. On the other part of so how we're doing it is we're considering new tools. We're working on tools to help us, or we're using tools that are coming up to use us. For example, today I do, if I need to do a 3D model, that will appear in one of our virtual AR experience or VR AR experiences, I will do it in VR. Today we have tools in VR to create 3D models that personally are easier to meet and use than Maya, or and they're more accessible than Maya or Blender. I never really been able to use the device, but now it's so much more natural for me. I can actually like sculpt and create those 3D assets in VR. So we're using all those new tools to prototype fast, to understand how we can put to the users some ideas of interactions really early before spending months of work and get validation from them. Because the only way we know it works is if the users understand it. So we assume a lot on the rules, but all the thing we've learned on 2D interfaces and UI for the past 30 years were for flat 2D. And a lot of those principles, some apply, the base one, the core ones of human conditions and things like this apply, but everything about the way it displays on the screen don't apply anymore. The color of the fonts, that doesn't matter as much anymore. So we have to rethink all that and retest that with users, kind of a little bit start from scratch. So and have a lot of directions. We're trying a lot of things.
Have you found, was there, I can just see the sort of the energy and the excitement. Was there a moment recently where you thought, almost like a eureka moment, where you thought, as you talked about earlier, this idea that moving your hands around, you know, your arms would fall off. But the fact it was the opposite, you felt, you know, fitter, stronger, more capable. Are you sort of discovering things that have come out of left field that you never thought would be there?
There's a lot of little things. I don't have like one major big big moment on there because it's all happened gradually.
Does it feel like an unfolding? In other words, the fact that we've been wrapped up and chained and tethered, that feeling that finally technology is here as a servant rather than being a master.
One thing came up the other day is the spatial memory. We realized how we knew it was important, it was there, but by working, we were setting up those boards with data in there, and they were all around in space. And after we put up down there our headsets, we continued the conversation, and we're pointing in space where they were not there anymore. But hey, you remember that there, and we're pointing there because our mind still remembered where that construct was. And that was like, wow, we really our minds, actually, when you give them the possibility to think in 3D and memorize in 3D, they're much more efficient. There's this efficiency of space that we have and capability of thinking spatially and memorizing spatially that's very powerful. So that was one of those small aha moments we regularly have is like, oh, yeah, we're still talking. Yeah, oh, yeah, and I point there and the guy's just, oh, Raphael was just like, yeah, he was understanding what I talked about because we both see it at the same place.
It's almost like you, even without wearing the headsets, you were back in that sort of 3D world.
Our memory was still imprinting that 3D memory world.
But how do you describe this to people that are still stuck in the naysayers, the people that say that this will never catch on? You know, the same people that said that, you know, the internet would never catch on. you had a great example at VR LA, which is a virtual reality in LA show, where you created this amazing three-dimensional Easter egg hunt. And did you get people looking at you with eyes the size of saucers after they've been through that process?
Yes, the eyes of saucers. Yeah, the eyes was there. The impress was there. We, for us, we're in Los Angeles, and it's an entertainment capital here. So being able to work only with big companies on enterprise-related projects for AR was a little bit constraining. So when the opportunity arose to do that setup in virtual reality in VRLA, which was it's a big group. There was Microsoft that helped us, VRLA with John Root helped us, and we worked also with Ralph to put all that together. So it was a solid team effort there. For us, what we wanted to transcribe there is that to show that even if those devices we have today, they're bulky, they're not made for everyday consumers, they can still deliver an amazing experience. And they can open everybody's eyes on what the potential for fun, entertainment, and beyond games, you know, we have to rethink how we play games and how we, and general entertainments, like going to the movies, even when you do a VR experience, it's very good. It's not accessible to most users. And even to do on a larger scale, it's hard to get a lot of people through. So we wanted to put that together. We were really excited about it. And it was a very short project in terms of the deadlines and everything together, but it worked out. It was very simple, 3-minute experience. We set up that big booth done by Funko, which usually do set designs for movies. So they create that big tree and all the, we send them the design, but they created all that world, physical set.
Yes.
And we were getting people inside that set with the HoloLens. And slowly, as soon as they enter the set, everything comes alive. You start seeing butterflies and rabbits running around and birds singing. Then there's a lot of like eggs to find. It's a Easter egg. Yes. So it was on Easter egg weekend. That was a perfect team. And they were opening those different eggs everywhere. And so we were anxious about the success of it. The first day was great. We had like 1 hour line. It's the professional only. And we got amazing feedback, amazing press out of it. The second day was crazy. People were waiting 3 hours on this thing. Wow. And for 3 minutes experience. And I was embarrassed about that. Like, you know, guys, it's good, but come on, don't wait 3 hours.
It's like the entire show is funneling through your Easter egg hunt, yeah.
Literally, no, not literally, but yes, we were the longest line there. And it was a great success. And even after 3 hours, people loved it. They were excited to have tried it. Not only try the device, but also see an experience that makes sense to them. You know, like they were able to relate to, okay, I see how that can work for me as an experience.
And how big is the community of people like you that are developing the sort of technologies that our children are going to grow up thinking is just normal?
Okay, I'm going to be honest on the community today. It's pretty small. The number of people working on this is pretty small, but that's going to change as soon as September release of iOS 11.
Wow.
Because Apple is going to release iOS 11, and in iOS 11 we have AR kit. And AR kit is really good augmented reality technology for phone. It's probably the best one you can find on the phone today. And that's going to bridge that gap because it brings elements that were not there in all the augmented reality phone technology before. they bring some technology in there that today make it useful and make it practical and make things much more interesting to work with. So as soon as that's come out, there's going to be millions of developers that are going to be thinking and start realizing the potential. And as we're getting, like, we have our own apps and people are going to come up with their own ARKit app. So we're going to have a rush of really good concepts that are going to inspire more people. And as they inspire people doing it as on the phone, which is very limited, you know, it's a very small field of view to the virtual world, mixing the two. But still with that, they'll start thinking about, oh, how can I get a bigger field of view? Like if I were wearing glasses, for example, it will make that help people understand that transition. Because this is the biggest hurdle when we work with companies, how we convince people to work in that and develop for it is people, even if we're 3D animals, we really think everything 2D.
Yeah.
And a lot of our creation we do are 2D. Like take paintings. Paintings are 2D representation of the world. Movies are 2D representation of videos of the world. We really think in creatively in 2D. So for all of us who start thinking 3D, I think we need something like that Apple ARKit to inspire people to start moving things in 3D and mixing it in our real world and start experimenting and seeing how it feels. So I think that's going to grow that community significantly. Right now, it's totally decent. I mean, there is a good size. For example, we're a Microsoft partner for reality. And I think in total, there's 26 agencies in the world. So compared to other Microsoft or technology probably, it's really small when you think about it as a representations for the HoloLens.
I mean,
and that's going to grow to 500 in the next year or two. That's what they're expected.
And do you see that there's going to be much more capital available from the VCs to fund these types of projects? Do you think there's going to be a stampede, as it were, now that it's established and now that there's much more credibility or belief that this is actually, you know, likely to turn into something that will change the way that we work?
Yeah, two things. The investment today are going into the hardware because we need a good hardware to work. As soon as it's going to start reaching consumer, at that point it's going to go to the, let me show you a device. It's going to go to the VC because the VC wants consumer application software,
yep.
You know, that reach consumer or large amount of businesses. So when that's going to happen, they're going to pour into it. But in the meantime, businesses are investing into it because there's real value for them in using those devices. So they will be the first one actually pouring a lot of the money into, you know, getting those devices and those technology up to there. Let me show you one of the customer devices that are going to be coming out soon.
What is that?
Yeah, the mirror.
I know. Oh, it's being glued back together outside.
Oh. So I'm going to try to get it grabbed. There's a Mira Prism, a little headset that you can put a phone inside to do augmented reality. And they're getting good venture capital backing, you know.
Oh, wow.
So everybody that has an idea to bring augmented reality closer to consumer or a wide range of small businesses will get some VC funding. And we see a lot of activity for the ARKit because the Apple augmented reality from the phone, because of that, because it's consumer ready, it's going to reach a lot of people. So VC and investors are start backing those startups. So here's our version of an early prototype of the Mira, but this is the device, and you put your phone in there and then you wear the device this. It's a bit bulky, but that's a $99 pre-order device.
Fantastic. And,
it's 30 times cheaper than the HoloLens.
But from a technology perspective, you know, people should remember that the first mobile phones were the size of house bricks. You know, and that wasn't that long ago. And now, you know, we're all wearing, you know, phones on our wrists. So I think that the pace forward is going to be from the technology as well, from, you know, it's the physical technology. And I think if you apply Moore's law, you know, in every couple of years, I think the devices are going to reduce in size significantly. So that must be quite exciting to be on the cusp of this technological revolution in terms of the hardware.
Yeah, in terms of the hardware, we've seen like every year 30% reduction in every new generation for the past 3 years. So if you keep that pace, you'll get to a glasses size in 2 years probably.
Do you, on the other side, on the social side, do you think there's going to be any kind of backlash? Because if we're all walking around with these devices, I know that Snapchat have, you know, recently launched the recording, you know, the Snap glasses.
Yeah.
But do you think there's going to be some sort of social issues with people that are going to rebel against this technology because they feel that they're being tracked everywhere they go? Is it the death of privacy?
You're talking about tracked everywhere you go?
Well, just generally, just the ability to, you know, to...
No, I got it. I'm bouncing on it. Well, you don't need that device to be tracked everywhere you go. You already have it in your pocket. You're already tracked everywhere you go. So that's already done. You know, your privacy, a lot of Americans give it up with their cell phone. So
yes.
Europeans are a bit more protective. But in that sense, that's gone.
Yeah.
You can get it back. It will be a lot of work, but we can get it back. But it's not putting the cell phone on your head will not change that privacy. So the backlash on privacy will probably not be related necessarily to that technology. It will just relate to a general behavior on how we share and accept to share our information. You have a number of things there. First, people have learned probably from the Google Glasses. Google Glasses strategy was a mistake.
Yes.
In a number of ways. And now you can see what they've done with the relaunch. Google Glasses are for enterprise. Okay. And Microsoft were smart enough to start just with that. That's why they don't want us to go to consumer or talk to consumer. They want us to use it only on enterprise because that's where there's the value. That's where people won't feel real about wearing the device, you know.
Because that's where you get the development, I guess, because you've got these willing users.
Exactly.
This sort of elitist fashion item for those of you who just live in San Francisco.
And that's exactly this concept of creating an elitist device for only a few people that have recording capabilities when you blink an eye. That was like huge mistakes for, you know, just for in terms of you could not predict it, but it was a mistake. When you see it after that. You can see those people much better into preparing that next generation coming. And Snapchat, I think, is an example. For me, it's clear that Snapchat are working on AR glasses. I don't have the insight, but it's tragically, it would make sense that they do it. And they release the spectacle. And for me, I'll see the spectacle as a test.
Yes.
A test to make can we bring technology into a pair of glasses with a camera?
Yeah.
And make it a fashion statement. Google did this. They got slammed. Snapchat succeeded. They're selling those glasses. You know, they're actually selling them and it works. People are buying them and nobody's complaining that the guy in front of you is walking around with a camera on his head. So first, we're changing. You know, we're more and more acceptable to have those with the cell phones everywhere filming things. We're more accepting of that and letting people doing it. And on the other side, we're getting much smarter understanding what works for people and what's the limits, you know, what you should do and not do. And I think the privacy one is something that we should, it's a totally other topic, but people should be more reactive to it. You know, there should be indicators that the spectacle is filming or not. You know, when you see a cell phone, all cameras have the really red dots, you know, so you knew if it was filming or not. Those should be things that come back actively so people know what's happening. So, you know, if you're infringing on my privacy or if you're not.
Those
can be learnings and can be evolutions. But a strategy of going there today is like, as long as the device is not ready for being a fashion statement, just don't show it and it's not a consumer device. When it will be ready for fashion statement, then it will be a consumer device.
And you have this great example of a couple going on a date in the future at some point where he's able, if she gives him permission, to detect what her heartbeat is.
Mm-hmm.
So that he can tell whether or not his jokes and his, you know, his efforts to win her over are actually causing her to fall asleep or causing her heart to quicken. So that's the sort of insight that we're going to have into other people and into each other that we just have no idea about right now.
Yeah. If you give permission to it, because
yeah, of course, yeah.
Heartbeat. But there's other new technology that would probably detect, you know, your pheromone levels that you're emitting. So you could get better readings, not more beyond just the heartbeat, like on the stress level, on the, you know, on the emotional. You can get transcriptions of emotions that people would express. If not expressing, you would be able to see a visual representation of that emotion. And you could design that. So you said, oh, when I'm happy, I wanted to show it like this on me, you know, and when I'm sad, I want it to be shown like that. And you can redesign that or work and choose a template or whatever, but you can choose those and then let people to see it or let some friends to see it when you want them to see it.
Fantastic. Imagine being able to see emotions. That's quite... My question, do you sleep at night with all of these ideas? This must be the most exciting time for you and for your team.
Yeah, I do sleep at night. Yeah,
From the excitement, you know, like sleep is like wasted opportunity.
No. You need to dream.
Yes, oh, of course. Yes,
a dream is important, and we get a lot of that. So I need to sleep. So no, I'm sleeping at night.
This is great because you must have the only job where you're working whilst you're sleeping.
No, I love it. I really love it. Now, on the concrete side of things, it's a hard space. You know, you mentioned it. It's a hard sell still today, and the resistance is everywhere. So it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing potential now to make it work and get there the way we wanted to get there. It's still a lot of hard work. So what would keep up at me at night is more, you know, the business side of things, you know, that would prevent me from sleeping than the ideas and the imaginations and all the possibilities of it.
But you're making, I mean, being one of 26, did you say, Microsoft partners? I mean, you've already made some huge inroads. Put too mild a point about it, but you are one of the at the absolute forefront of these sorts of designs. So, you've achieved an enormous amount with After Now.
Yeah, and we're pretty proud of that actually. And that part of getting there and getting that vision of that 3D world, I think, is key. And as we're doing this meetup in Los Angeles, the Explore Mixed Reality meetup, to gather that community here in LA, and we see how inspiring it is, and how inspiring people are to thinking about that and growing that thinking just beyond VR, and getting that momentum for creating those new concepts. But again, until hardware is ready, until the financing gets in place for everything to get finance, all those things are going to take a few years to get there, and all those concrete things. The thing is that when they will happen, you mentioned rejections. Us, we're pretty old, I would say, you know, and that transfership will be really hard for us.
Yes.
There's a lot of things we won't understand, and it's like for a lot of post 35-year-old, it's like Snapchat.
Yeah.
You know, they don't get it. You know, and Snapchat is those new generation of apps, and those things will bring a lot of that thing of where, what, why, you know, where is the sense of this? And people will, the new generation will love it and will totally immerse in it, but will be so, you know, backward on it. So we're excited about building that. We know the backlash and the futures and the path for it. We're really clear on it for a lot of things. So we're proud to be there. Excited to be here and putting everything we have in that space. You know, we're doing all the risks we can because we know the road we're going to be long to get to where it's actually used by everyone. And we hang on there until there, you know, it's going to be a long up and down choppy road, but it's going to be for so far, it's a lot of fun. We're going in all directions, you know, from enterprise to creating games for the Miarfries to creating Easter egg hunts, the RLA. We're tapping an old, the spaces where people are actually going to use those devices and those technology and understand and growing this. And every new project, we're learning we have new learnings. And things are moving fast enough. I mean, not fast, in my opinion, not fast enough, but they're moving in a pace where we see the momentum happening and people understand. So
well, we may be looking at the new Microsoft, who knows? Sorry? I said I may be talking to the head of the new Microsoft. Who knows?
No, but yeah, hopefully, yeah. No, the company is going to be very different in 3 years for sure. You know, you're at the little jesting level now.
In all seriousness,
to be a bigger company.
It's entirely possible, I think, because if you're able to really understand this space that is growing so quickly, then you know the future for Afternow must be astonishing in terms of how it could grow and how you know your team could build.
It is. It's an impressive, not only just the understanding the space, but also the partners. We partner with Microsoft, and we're partnering now with all you know in the process of partnering with other. All the other glasses devices companies and the network we've been building in the space now is very very well working. You know, we're not only having an understanding, but we're now a vision of the key players and who's doing what and where the problems are and where things are going to change. The pace, we have an understanding of the pace of what things are happening. So this is business-wise, this is the key. For you know, staying relevant in the space and also grow and sustain the technology with us, because we're software, we're not the hardware. So for us, we're depending on the quality of the hardware, and we're bringing all the software. But people have to bring us good hardware, so we can build great software for it.
But and again, I mean, September must be incredibly exciting for you as well. Just having that inflection point, just seeing, you know, what floodgates are going to open at that, you know, in just a, you know, next month, goodness.
Yes, it's exactly right. You're right. It's already like in a few days.
Oh, good. But anyway, I need to bring you back to Earth, I'm afraid. Or back to 2D land, because I have my questionnaire for you.
Okay.
So this is the questionnaire that I borrowed from James Lipton of Inside the Actors Studio. So we have 10 questions here. And the first is, what is your favorite word?
I would say done.
Done.
That's the word I like to hear.
Yes, done. Yeah. So what is your least favorite word?
That's the one that gives me most pleasure to hear. The least one is, that's just.
Just, or yeah, or working on it, something like that. Yeah.
It's just, you know, we just need to do that. Oh, we just need to add that. Oh, you just need to add this. Or it's, that doesn't mean anything. Just, you know, it's not going to work. That doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I can understand.
Like, people say, hey, attention, you know, warning, you know, attention. And they warn you, but they don't tell you why. They just warn you. And you're like, what? You know?
Yes.
So this is like this. What those word is, for me, it doesn't make sense. Just
fantastic. So what are you most excited about right now?
Well, you said I don't sleep because of all the possibilities. That's the one. I mean, it's like their current possibilities. You know, I'm really excited about everywhere we can go and everywhere we can make this thing work. That's my drive these days. You know, meeting people, getting them inspired and see what they come up with and then work with them in building those things.
And what turns you off most right now?
Probably the current populist talk we hear everywhere. That's a very big turn off.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. So what sound or noise do you love?
2400 baud modem connecting. I don't know, a lot of people remembering that, but that's the early time where we're connecting to, you know, networks with computers. And they had this amazing, like, dialing and connecting, gringing sound. And I remember, you know, that was my life for years. So I miss it now.
The handshake.
That's the song I really loved, is that connecting and you're online.
You know? Fantastic. Exactly. Yeah. So what noise or sound do you hate?
Oh, dog barking. I hate that.
Okay. And what is your favorite curse word?
Okay. I say fuck a lot. That's all. I'm not going to, yeah.
No, but listen, that is the most flexible, adaptable word in the universe. I'm sure we need to create some sort of AR version of fuck. I don't know what that would be. I mean, I'll leave that up to you and your team. So what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Well, yeah, probably I could try like trading, a trader.
Oh, wow.
It could be another one I could try. I'll do a lot of photography, but I don't want that to be a profession, so probably not. Still stay a hobby. 3D modeler, creating things in 3D, I love that, but I don't have time, so I'm not doing that much. Yeah, those are the trader.
And what profession would you hate to do? Or what would you not like to attempt?
Everything related to hospitality, like hotels, restaurants. And dealing with a lot of people without making connections. You know, all those jobs, and you have to stay late, and you have to give up your weekends. It's profession I'm not interested in.
Just trying to maintain that smile in the face of you know, illogical irrelevance.
Right, exactly.
And my last question is, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Okay, when I read that question the first time, the first thing that came to me will not make sense to anyone, but I'm going to say it because that's the one that came to me. It would say, "We love you."
Oh, wow.
And that's the why it's really complicated. And
No. But that's fantastic. It's a fabulous thing to hear. Now, my last question is, how do people find out more about you and what you're doing with After Now? Because there's so much that they should learn about what you're doing, because you are just at the forefront, the cutting edge of this industry that's going to revolutionize really what we're doing. So how do people find out more about you?
First thing would be to our meetups, I think, because that you can join that community and learn a lot. So it's Exploring Mixed Reality on meetup.com. The next one is next week on the 31st in Pasadena. So that would be a first. And after, our social, After Now Lab, and our website, afternow.io, would be a great way to connect. You can reach out to us directly there. The phone number, emails is in there. That's and we're looking for, you know, anybody with any good ideas or concept or creative, or that's, we're already open. We, you know.
And I think people should also check out, because there's a number of interviews that you've been on, a number of presentations, keynotes that are on YouTube. So, I mean, it's just such amazing, the sort of work that you're doing. So I think people should definitely, you know, take the time to listen to some of the interviews that you've been in. And Philippe, thank you. It's been such a pleasure having you on the show. And it's so exciting to listen and see what you're doing. And I can't wait for September and, you know, how the world will unfold as you, you know, dominate the market with all the stuff that you're creating.
Awesome. Yeah, it was awesome.